This is The Guardian.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. All episodes out now.
For anyone celebrating Easter this weekend, Donald Trump has the perfect gift for you. And no, it isn't a chocolate egg.
Former President Donald Trump has started selling Bibles. He has released a video on Truth Social urging his supporters to buy what he has called the God Bless the USA Bible.
That's right. For a mere $60, you can buy the Word of God endorsed by Trump himself, with a cover design based on the American flag. This latest Trump-touted product comes just weeks after he made a surprise appearance on stage at SneakerCon to push his very own brand of footwear.
The gold Never Surrender high tops officially sold out. No word yet on if the limited supply of $399 kicks will be restocked.
And the selling doesn't stop there.
The company behind former President Donald Trump's social media app, Truth Social, has gone public, and it is off to a strong start.
Trump Media's listing on the stock exchange has netted the former president billions of dollars, at least on paper. So why is the self-proclaimed billionaire doing all this?
State appeals court judge has just granted Trump's request to stay the $464 million judgment in his New York civil fraud case.
Trump is currently caught between several criminal and civil trials, which could cost him millions and potentially even see him behind bars. On top of that, there's the small matter of a presidential campaign. So the question is, can Donald Trump afford to do it all? I'm Jonathan Friedland, columnist at The Guardian, and this is Politics Weekly America.
So even though it is still highly unusual to have a former president appearing in court, at this point, there's some normalcy to the proceedings.
Erica Auden is a legal reporter for Politico based in New York. She's had a very busy week.
Hi, I'm Diane Macedo. We have breaking news. Former President Trump will stand trial in the hush money case against him starting April 15th.
So the hearing on Monday was for the judge to determine whether the lawyers on both sides require more time to go through this last minute set of documents that they received from federal prosecutors that are relevant to this criminal case that Donald Trump is facing.
This one is for falsifying business records to hide the hush money payments Trump signed off on ahead of the 2016 presidential election. Those checks were written by Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, to pay off adult film star Stormy Daniels and keep her quiet about her alleged sexual affair with Trump.
And the hearing took about 2 hours. The judge ultimately determined that the parties did not need more time to go through these thousands of pages of documents. He said that he had already given them a bit of a break from the original planned trial date of March 25th. And so he stuck with the trial date that he had already effectively pushed back to, which was April 15th.
So that was one very dramatic bit of legal action for Donald Trump. But meanwhile, there's a whole other parallel track going on. Just fill us in on that one as well.
That's right. So during this courtroom hearing, a separate court, an appellate court in New York, a panel of judges from that court decided that Donald Trump could put up a bond of far, far less than he was originally required to post in a civil fraud case.
He owed $464 million by midnight, but now he has 10 days to pay $175 million.
Now, this is a case in which a judge found that Donald Trump and his adult sons and his business associates committed widespread business fraud by overvaluing properties owned by the Trump Organization. The judge imposed a fine of, with interest, about $454 million on Donald Trump alone. And Trump is appealing that verdict. Tish James, who's the New York Attorney General who brought this lawsuit against Donald Trump, can begin collecting on the judgment unless Donald Trump posts a bond for the entire amount of the fine, or he puts the amount in cash in effectively an escrow account that the court will hold until the end of the appeal. The panel of judges decided that he could post a bond of just $175 million. And this is really important to Donald Trump because he said in court filings that he doesn't have the cash and he couldn't obtain a bond for the full amount.
And today, his lawyers revealed that more than 30 firms said they were unable or, quote, unwilling to accept the risk associated with such a large bond.
The only way for him to stop collection of the judgment at that point was to get the court to either order the collection stopped or to allow him to post a smaller bond.
Which is what they've done. So they've reduced the price on him. The price tag is down to a manageable $175 million. Do you know what the judge's thinking was, why they decided? Did they think he had in effect been fined too much by the lower court?
So the fine is still $454 million and interest is still accruing on that. The decision they made was to allow him to post a smaller bond. But if he doesn't win his appeal, he will still have to pay the full amount of the judgment. And the panel of judges didn't give any explanation for their decision. So we could guess, but we don't know what their reasoning was.
It's fascinating, this business about the need he had for the price tag, even albeit for an interim payment, to be reduced, because it goes to this kind of split narrative that Donald Trump maintains, certainly when he talks to his supporters. On the one hand, he presents himself as this very wealthy man, the successful businessman, the blue-collar billionaire, they called him. Back in 2016. And indeed, his followers on Truth Social were led to believe that he had $500 million in ready cash available, just not for this bond. And then on the other hand, when he's in the court, he's obviously, his lawyers are arguing that, look, I just can't make that amount of money and can't even, you know, get the bond to pay for it. Where does that leave him legally, sort of saying these two things at the same time?
Well, the irony is that the entire civil fraud trial was about the fact that he inflated his net worth.
Yes.
The outcome of that trial was that the judge found that, in fact, he did that. So the court itself came to the conclusion that he is not worth as much as he has said he's worth.
Yeah, they're almost conceding to the other side. Yeah, you were right. We really don't have the money. What is the, given that he's in a way made that sort of concession, I'm curious to know what grounds he will have to appeal that verdict handed down in January to say that, that he had been exaggerating his wealth. Hard to know how he appeals that, given that he's also, as it were, pleading poverty in the court. But you just tell us the timeline on that. We now know we have that date in the diary for the Stormy Daniels case. What's the timeline on this one?
That's really up in the air. There isn't a firm timeline for when the appeal will be decided. And it is also possible that even after that appeal is decided, if the verdict is upheld, he could potentially appeal it to a higher court in New York, which is the New York's highest court, is the Court of Appeals.
And we just know this is his modus operandi going back decades, to draw things out, to go through the court's appeal after appeal, to put off the day of reckoning. That's been his style back to when he was a real estate tycoon getting into legal hot water in New York back in the 70s and 80s.
It is. And you have to think that in this case where the judgment is so large that it will have a substantial impact on his personal wealth and the sort of functionality of his family business, that he will do whatever it takes, as much as he can, to get it reversed.
So we've got our heads around those two legal tracks, but because this is Donald Trump, there are more, plenty more court actions and court cases out there, including, if we're talking about money and bonds that he has to pay, that just a few weeks ago, another bond was put on him worth more than $90 million as he fights yet another verdict, the $83.3 million verdict against him In the case involving the author and advice columnist E. Jean Carroll, who listeners will remember accused Donald Trump of raping her in a department store dressing room back in the 1990s, Trump denied the claim, but then a federal civil court jury said that he was indeed liable for sexual assault. He's got a bond there, as in money he's got to hand over in that case too. It's not yet April, and he's already building up quite a pile of debts. I mean, this is really costing him.
That's right. So there was the case you just mentioned, the trial against E. Jean Carroll, and he did come up with a bond in that case for, as you mentioned, more than $90 million. He has already posted that bond, and we don't know exactly what he put as what he used as collateral for that bond, but the bond is posted. And there was, in fact, even another trial against E. Jean Carroll last year.
The jury awards Carroll $2 million in compensatory damages for the battery claims against Trump. They also find that Trump defamed Carroll in October 2022 when he called her allegations a con job.
He put up cash. That verdict was significantly smaller. That was about $5 million. And he put up cash while he is appealing that verdict as well. He had posted the more than $90 million bond in the second Carroll verdict, and he has said he will now post the $175 million bond in the civil fraud case. So yes, he has racked up quite a few judgment tabs.
Yeah, I mean, his financial advisors will be sweating a little bit. I mean, voters would be forgiven if all of this was all too confusing, this blizzard of, you know, telephone number sums of money, but different court processes and tracks. It can get very confusing. The thing that is not confusing is the image of a former president on trial in a courtroom. And it now looks as if it's possible because all the others have been sort of, you know, delayed and there's appeals and all that. But in the Stormy Daniels case, that is one that could genuinely start and finish with a verdict before the November elections. And just on the optics of that, I mean, you know, of a former commander-in-chief being on trial, what's that going to be like? I mean, you know, people will remember some of these sort of big American celebrity trials can go on for months, it seems. The country is gripped. Just walk us through what we should be expecting for the one case, the Stormy Daniels case, that is going to be an actual trial.
So this trial is expected to take about 6 weeks, which is fairly long. It's not months, but it's quite a bit of time. It's also quite a bit of time that Donald Trump will not be able to go on the campaign trail during regular business hours. He could go on the weekends. He could go in the evenings.
But he does have to be in court, right? This is not optional.
He is required to be in court every minute that trial is occurring. The trial will not be televised. There are often news cameras that are allowed to be in the hallways outside the courtroom. And that was also the case in the civil fraud trial. And he would usually several times a day stop before the news cameras and make remarks.
Thank you very much. Judge Ed Gorin has done a terrible disservice to the state of New York. What he's done is terrible. Businesses are fleeing. You see that? We just released a statement on Truth.
So he had an opportunity to sort of communicate his feelings about the trial and whatever else he wanted to say several times a day during the civil fraud trial. And that will likely be the case in this criminal trial. But other than that, you will not see him in court.
We've talked about the way he likes to present this persona publicly of being, you know, fabulously wealthy with the private jet and the sort of, you know, gold gilded palace that he lives in Trump Tower and so on. Yet on the other hand, telling the court, I don't have enough money to pay this bond. Now he's going to actually have to raise this money. Let's talk about how he does that. And this news this week where he floated his social media operation, Truth Social, and related digital enterprises.
Former President Trump's social media company, Truth Social, just ended its first day of trading on the NASDAQ. The stock closed at just under $58 a share. And while that is a 16% gain, it represents a considerable fall from the 56% surge when the market opened. That said, the company still finished the day valued at $11 billion.
Just tell us about what that is and how that how much money, real money, that has made for him.
Well, that deal will increase his net worth by quite a bit.
Trump owns 58% of the company, potentially worth up to $5 billion, quadrupling his wealth overnight.
However, he is prohibited for 6 months from either selling his shares or using them as a collateral, borrowing against them. So that is not going to help him right now pay his legal bills or pay his judgments, but it could, because it could in the future, because it's possible that by the time his appeal in the civil fraud case is decided, that he will have come into that money. He'll be able to sell the shares, or he will be able to use them for a loan. So that is possibly a big win for him.
I mean, all of this arises because he floated on the stock market, his digital media empire, on Tuesday, and he owns 60% of it, and it's been valued now, in terms of the sort of stock market response to it, at some $5 billion for his stake, which is a huge amount of money. I mean, it surprises people who are, you know, stock market watchers, because this is a pretty small operation. I think it has 5 million active users, certainly in February this year, whereas the likes of TikTok or Facebook, they measure their users in the billions. He's got, you know, he's got even fewer followers on Truth Social than he did on Twitter, or now X. Well, how do we explain that this pretty small beer social media platform has been valued by the market at this sort of huge value?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind is that it seems like the entire value is wrapped up in his voice on the being on the platform, and the fact that he is, you know, he's a leading presidential candidate, and he's the focus of a lot of attention because of these legal battles we've been talking about. I think the big question is what happens to the value of this company if he doesn't become president again. Will anybody care what he has to say if he loses the election? Beyond that, if he's in jail and can't use it at all, which is a possibility, albeit a remote possibility at this point, but a possibility, one would expect that that would significantly impact the value of this company.
And he's not putting all his eggs in the single basket of Truth Social. There's been more entrepreneurial activity endorsing a Bible this week. The company made it clear on their website, GodBlessTheUSABible.com, that their business is not owned or managed or controlled by Donald Trump or the Trump Organization. It was just an endorsement. It does make you wonder who actually would, which Christian wants a Bible endorsed by a thrice married man judged legally liable for rape.
He is also a person who is about to go on trial for paying a porn star to keep quiet about affair allegations with him.
Yes. One would have thought that would undermine the brand a little bit, but we'll put that aside. Also, you know, the sneakers, those sort of high-end gold, or certainly expensive, whether or not they're high quality or not, Trump sneakers. I mean, there is a sort of Trump business, but I suppose the same point stands that you've made there, which is they all depend on his, you know, stock, his standing being high. One thought is, all those small donations that come from individuals that are donated to either to the Republican National Committee or people think they're giving to Trump's election campaign. And there's been a lot of talk about whether or not those are really going to pay his legal bills. And it's been noticed that if you do donate to the Republican National Committee, for example, you have to actively opt out of allowing those donations to go into Trump's legal defense fund and pay his legal bills. Are we in effect going to see one of the two main political parties of America fund a candidate's legal struggles?
Effectively, yes. He has largely paid up to this point for his legal bills through his Save America PAC. Last year, that PAC paid more than $50 million in legal bills for him. But this week, there was some news related to that, because Trump inked a new fundraising agreement with the RNC that means that a portion of the donations to the RNC will go to either his campaign and then also to his Save America PAC. So money will be routed from the RNC to the Save America PAC and then used to pay his legal bills.
And made all the easier by the fact that his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, is now co-chair of the Republican National Committee. So it's all very cozy for Donald Trump. And it just shows the extent to which he is absolutely dominant, that he can have this arrangement that obviously will help him. Friend of the podcast, Margaret Sullivan, who's a Guardian contributor, wrote about her worry that this predicament that Donald Trump finds himself in could very easily lead to influence or access to the president being sort of for sale, because of former president and potential future president, in the sense that people who want to influence Donald Trump, it was said just one day this week, you know, that a few years ago, the way you did that was you would book a long, you know, a month stay in the Trump Hotel in Washington, even if you didn't, and leave the room empty, just so that way you had effectively put money in Donald Trump's pocket. And if you were the government of a foreign country with business before the US, that might be quite appealing. Now you can imagine there are all kinds of more direct ways to do it. You could buy a stake in the Trump digital media empire. You could donate to his legal defense fund. Margaret Sullivan's worry was that leaves him vulnerable to, you know, influence operations. There is that dimension to this, isn't there?
There is. And if he does, in fact, become president, I think, you know, for all of the guardrails that people attempted to put in place to minimize these conflicts of interest or opportunities to influence him during his presidency, starting in 2017, it seems like they'll have to be much, you know, many more additional measures implemented if he becomes president. As you pointed out, there are many other opportunities to get his attention, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And when you say there'll have to be a whole lot more guardrails if Trump is president again, you know, ain't that the truth? And that was true not just in this area that we've been talking about. Look, just to demonstrate that it isn't only on one side, this business of fundraising and campaigns and money. On Thursday night, it will happen after you and I are speaking now, Joe Biden is due to be in Radio City Music Hall in New York for a real fundraising gala where he'll be with his predecessors, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, who's not often present at these sorts of things. Politico, your place, reports that the tickets begin at rock bottom prices at $250, going all the way up to $500,000 to be in close proximity. And if you want a picture of yourself with all three former presidents, that is going to cost you a cool $100,000. It does mean that they're no slouches at serious fundraising themselves on the Democratic side. Indeed, of the two, which one is ahead in the money business, Biden or Trump?
Oh, Biden by far.
Which may surprise people, right? People think of Trump as the money guy.
Yeah, but the Democrats are far, far outpacing Republicans when it comes to fundraising this election.
Erica, we always ask our guests on the podcast a what else question, something different. I want to ask you about Ronna McDaniel, who was, in fact, Lara Trump's predecessor as chair of the RNC, Republican National Committee. She signed on to be a commentator, a sort of expert pundit for NBC News. That was announced. There was a bit of a reaction to that, and she is no longer to be a pundit on NBC News. Just tell us what happened with that and what your view of it is.
Sure. Well, it's quite a mess.
The McDaniel mess is over. Her ouster from NBC News coming after an unprecedented on-air rebellion from NBC's top anchors over Ronna McDaniel's role in subverting democracy in 2020.
It seems like it's going to continue to be quite a debacle. The Washington Post reported that McDaniel is lawyering up and preparing to sue the company. And if, you know, all of the reporting is true, it seems that NBC has quite a mess on its hands internally. Many people, many of the reporters there and anchors there were very displeased and actually went public with their displeasure about this hire. And although they've parted ways now, I would imagine that that hasn't ended the conversation internally. So it will be interesting to see how the company tries to remedy this with their own staff.
And it did, in this case, a lot of those NBC star names just drew the line at Ronna McDaniel because they believed she had been an election denier after 2020 just wouldn't concede the truth that Joe Biden had won. Then she did on NBC say, yeah, he won fair and square, and that brought mockery from Donald Trump. So she just couldn't win. Erica Auden of Politico, thanks so much for talking me through all of this big week on Politics Weekly America.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is all from me for this week. Now, it's 1 year since the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich was detained in Russia on espionage charges. His friends, family and colleagues believe that he's a victim of international politics. Last year, I spoke to his friend Polina Ivanova about what Joe Biden could do to help secure Evan Gershkovich's release. So do listen back to that. It's also 1 year since the owner of The Guardian, the Scott Trust, released the findings from an academic report it had commissioned into the founding of the Manchester Guardian more than 200 years ago. The investigation found a historical connection between transatlantic slavery and John Edward Taylor, the journalist and cotton merchant who founded the newspaper, as well as the other Manchester businessmen who funded its creation. Now, reporting's continued over the last year, and there'll be a link to all the latest work by our colleagues on the legacies of transatlantic enslavement in the show notes. You can also listen to The Guardian's limited podcast series on the investigation. Just search for Cotton Capital wherever you get your podcasts. But for now, it's goodbye. The producer is Danielle Stevens. The executive producer is Maz Ebtahaj. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Thanks, as always, for listening.
This is The Guardian.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.